All right, so this week we make it this an exciting week. It's the end of Shmuel Aleph this week. We're gonna learn Perek Lamed Aleph, and the next week we'll start with Shmuel Beis. So it's definitely a bit of a depressing Perek. It's gonna be the Perek where Shaul is going to die, but as we'll see, it's very interesting how the Navi blends in all the complexity of Shaul's life, right? The good and the bad, the uplifting and the inspiring, along with the depressing and just frustrating. It all comes together in this one parak. And we're also going to see that a lot of Shaul, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, when we had the Shaul's trip to the woman of Ein Dor, and we saw all the themes of Shaul's early career, all the promise, his first trip to Shmuel and his first prophecy, and then how that all kind of falls apart at the end. So the parak is also going to bring some memories of some of the earlier moments of Shmuel Aleph, as we get to this really pivotal turning point. It's also important for us to appreciate that even though we call this the end of Shmuel Aleph, you know, there's really no such thing, right? It's one Sefer Shmuel, which for convenience, they split into two books because Sefer Shmuel is 55 prakim long and there's a lot happening over there. But the truth is that it's one Sefer, and we'll look at this a little bit this afternoon, and we'll see it more in depth next week when we begin Shmuel Beis Perek Aleph, that it's one strong sequence happening throughout over here. We shouldn't think of it as a main break with the end of Shaul's life and then a new book afterwards. The themes that we've been building on and exploring until now are going to continue the coming weeks. So we'll open up the old source sheet and let's get started. So we have already noticed that the Navi, as we get to the end of Shaul's life, just literally, the Navi accelerates and emphasizes the contrast between the falling Shaul and the rising David by switching back and forth between the two of them. So, Perek Chaf Zayin, we were following David as he goes off to the land of the Plishtim. And then Chaf Ches, we were following Shaul as he marches to battle against the Plishtim. And then Chavtes and Lamed, we switch back to David as he's going to the battle and then coming back home and then going to fight a Malek, which we saw last week. And now, Perek Lamed Aleph, we're going to go back to Shaul again, right, where they're actually going to fight the battle. And the next week, we're going to shift scene again back to David and Malek. So it's one, three different times. Then Abi switches David, Shaul, David, Shaul, David, Shaul, putting the two of them next to each other and contrasting the two. David is rising stronger and stronger. The last thing we saw the Navi say was that David emerged victorious from his battle against Amalek, and he sent the spoil to the people all over Yehuda, really entrenching himself politically as the rising power in Shevet Yehuda, culminating with David bringing the spoil to Hebron, which in a couple of weeks is going to be established as the capital city of David's burgeoning Malchus. So we shift from Hebron, all of the promise that city provides for David, the headquarters of Shevet Yehuda, the rise of this new kingdom. So now with Shaul, as we shift back to Perek Lamed Aleph, everything is falling apart. I'm going to scroll down for a second just to see how the parak is going to begin, but we're not going to talk about the beginning of the parak yet. The way the parak, it really just throws us in. You see the first pasuk. The first pasuk of the parak is right after David HaMelech. It doesn't set the scene with the Plishtim going and fighting Bnei Yisrael. It just throws us into the battle immediately. Plishtim nilchamim b'Yisrael. Now, almost as if we're in the middle of what's already being discussed. This is another example. We see how dramatically the Navi really switches scenes back and forth. The reason why we're doing this is because the Navi had set the scene for this battle to Prakim earlier. So let's go back to the top of the source sheet and see what we had already been told. Back in Perek Chavtes, we're in Lamed Aleph. In Perek Chavtes, the Navi had told us when David was still with Achish, Melech Gad, the Plishtim gathered all their camps, right? All five city-states of the Plishtim gathered together in Afek, and Yisrael is camped in Emek Yisrael. So let's remind ourselves of the geography and remind ourselves of why this city is a big deal. We've seen the city of Afek before. We saw the Plishtim camp there in the first battle they fought against Bnei Yisrael in Shmuel Aleph. It was the battle in the time of Eli and Eli's children when Shmuel is very young and rising as a Navi. And that was the battle which led to total disaster. If you just look at the maps for a second so we can remind ourselves, Afek is right on the border between the Shvelah, right between the low hill country and the coast. So the Plishtim are based over here. And this was that first battle where they fought the Jews at Afek and they won a crushing victory and penetrated all the way to the interior of the country, destroyed the Mishkan at Shiloh, and then totally dominated Bnei Yisrael, with the exception of during some time of Shmuel's leadership, until really Shaul throws them out. So that city is now coming back, right? That haunting memory of the past is being brought. Except this time, the battle is different because the Plishtim have been trying time and time again to replicate their victory of that first battle. The game plan has always been very simple for the Plishtim. We're over here, so we want to invade east. Just go east, right? They keep on trying to replicate the victory they had the first time around. Shaul defeats them every single time they try. So that was the battle of Goliath, was them trying to invade over here. David fights the Plishtim many times when he's Shaul's general. They keep on invading through some of the mountain passes down in the land of Yehuda, and they get pushed back every time. So now the Plishtim are going to try a new approach. If we cannot invade the heartland of Bnei Yisrael, just going straight from west to east, so they're going to go all the way around, and they're going to try to penetrate from the north. Remember, the basic problem the Plishtim have is that they have the more technologically sophisticated army, they have better weapons, and they have chariots. Chariots are unstoppable on the plains. You get into the mountains, you get into the hills, and that advantage is not nearly as strong. You can't really fight with chariots on a mountain. So they're now going to march north to Emek Yisrael, which goes all the way east to west, and they're going to try to penetrate the land of Bnei Yisrael from the north. And Shaul apparently feels is going to make battle with them right over there. So once again, they're trying to break through. And you can get a sense pretty easily, you know, just look at this picture. This is a picture from Har Gilboa. And here is Emek Yisrael. So you can see it's extremely fertile land. You could see why there certainly would be a battle over who's going to contain it. And this is where the Plishtim and Bnei Yisrael are actually going to fight. They're actually going to fight down here. And then Shaul is going to retreat up the mountain on Har HaGabal. There's one great picture here where you can really see the whole scene. You have here the whole huge valley of Emek Yisrael. The international highway runs up the coast and then along here, going all the way then from there to Babel. And it's really controlled by two mountains. In the north, Har Tavor, that is where... it's the land of Naphtali. That's where Devorah and Barak fight their battle against the Canaanim. It's Canaanim who live in the valley. And the mountain in the south, which controls it, is Har HaGilboa. So you can see, right? You have the flats. Here's where the battle is going to happen. And then the Jews are going to retreat south to the mountain, try to get some protection over there. Okay. So now with that background, we'll see. So the Navi tells us, the Plishtim are fighting Bnei Yisrael, and it doesn't go well. Immediately, Vayanusu Anshei Yisrael and Bnei Plishtim, Vayaplu Chalim Behar HaGilboa. So the Plishtim are winning. Bnei Yisrael are fleeing, right? They're running away from the valley. They're running up the mountain. And as they're running up the mountain, so the Jews are being, the retreating Jews are being killed. You know, normally in a battle, when you take the heavy casualties is when you begin to retreat. As the two armies are fighting face to face, there's not so much going on. But once one army begins to run away, then they're extremely vulnerable, and they're just being wiped out as they retreat up the mountain. Now, Pasuk Beis, if we read it carefully, with Pasuk Aleph tells us something interesting. Which some of the farsh we're going to flag. Vayidbeku plishtim es Shaul ve'es banav. So the Plishtim were chasing hard after Shaul and his children. Vayaku Plishtim asihonosem v'sabinadav v'smalkishua b'nei Shaul. V'atzechpada malchama Shaul v'yimtzu ha'morim anshei bakashas v'yachel ma'od miyamorim. I'll talk about these words of v'yachel ma'od hamayamorim in a second. But notice the Plishtim are chasing, they're going after Shaul and his children. It seems like they're killing them on the mountain. But Shaul is fighting, and this is after the Navi says that Bnei Yisrael already retreated. So scroll down for a second. All right, we just have Rashi over here who notices the way the parak starts, and Rashi says, Nachzor l'inyan rishon. Let's go back to our previous topic, right? The switching back and forth between David and Shaul. But Abarbanel notices that the Plishtim are fighting Shaul's sons, and they're fighting Shaul after the battle has already been lost. So this is the first instance we're going to see, and we're going to see several, how in the moment of Shaul's collapse, the Navi, you know, it's like it took the darkness to realize the light. It took the moment of Shaul's fall to notice the greatness that was within him. That's going to come out in several ways in this parak. Barbanel notices the first one, that as Bnei Yisrael are retreating, they're just running helter-skelter back up the mountain, so Shaul and his sons are remaining to fight. How are they able to catch up to Shaul and his sons? It's because everyone else is retreating south from the valley up Har Gilboa. Shaul and his sons are the ones who are remaining to fight, right? They're the rear guard. So let's go back up to the picture for a second so we could visualize it. So the battle happened over here. The Jews are all just running up the hill. And Shaul and his sons are fighting like a rear guard action as the army retreats behind them. So the battle's already been lost, but they are the ones who are still fighting, which is exactly what you would expect. You'd hope that a king would do. You can imagine, you know, many times the king is the first one out of there. He's the first one retreating, but that is not the case with Shaul. He remains to fight, even as his sons, right? And Yehonasan, we know Yehonasan's effectiveness as a fighter. So they are they're fighting alongside him, and all three of them are killed with Shaul right there. Then the pasuk has this difficult pasuk. We'll see two main ways that the Mefarshim understand it. Vayachel ma'od mehamorim. So the good old 1917 JPS translate this. He was in great anguish by reason of the archers. What does that mean? He's in great anguish. Is that physical or emotional? I have no idea what they meant. But let's look at what the Mefarshim have to say. There are two basic ways of understanding this, but there's a lot to say for the second one. Let's see. Radak and Abarbanel both understand that this is referring to fear, that Shaul was afraid. Right? Think of Az Yashir. Chil achaz yashvei palashas. When we heard about when they heard about Kriyas Yamsov, they were seized by terror. So that's how Radak understands. He understands that Shaul was terrified. Abarbanel explains, what's he afraid of? Shaul's not afraid of dying. You know, Shaul has already, Shaul knows he's going to die. We talked about this a couple of prakim ago. Reish Lakish had that amazing medrash where the Rabbeinu Shalom turns to the Malachim and he says, you know, look at this creature I've created who goes to, you know, brings his children with him when he knows he's going to die because he's accepted the din. And the Abarbanel says, you know, he knows he's going to die. His sons have already been killed in front of him. Shaul has nothing left to live for. So he's not afraid of dying because of Abarbanel. Abarbanel says he's afraid of what could happen to him if he's captured alive. He's afraid of the torture that the Plishtim could put him through. The Ramban is actually going to talk about this in next week's Parsha, when the Ramban talks about the symbolism of the battle between Yaakov and the Malach of Esav. So he quotes Midrashim. What's the meaning of the intense pain that Yaakov goes through? And the Ramban quotes Chazals, who described the torture that the Romans would put us through. And Amoraim were saying, you know, I could die, I'll Kiddush Hashem, but I don't know if I could be tortured, I'll Kiddush Hashem, like what the Romans did to the Tanaim. So, you know, there were people before the Romans who were absolutely barbaric in terms of how they treated their captured enemies. And the Barbanel says, that's exactly what Shaul was afraid of from the Plishtim. Would they blind him like Shimshon? Would they cut him, cut him apart alive? After all, you know, Shaul has been a fierce enemy to the Plishtim for many years. So that's how Barbanel understands what's going on, probably the redaction. It means that Shaul was afraid of what he would endure if he was captured alive. But the Marikra understands the pasuk very differently. It's important because it gives us a different portrayal, a different perspective of Shaul in this parak. He says, Vayachel me'od me'amorim does not mean fear. Because Targum Yonasan, Dachal achadim in kashyasav yishomrim, sorry, Targum Yonasan says he was afraid. Marikra says, no, it means he was wounded. Chala, right? He was taken ill. He was wounded because they're hitting them with their arrows, which really makes a lot of sense. Let's scroll up for a second, because what did the pasuk actually say? Vayachel me'od me'amorim. Doesn't say that he's very afraid of the plishtim, and the pasuk uses the word plishtim time and time again. It's like the Navi wants us to see, it's like plishtim are everywhere. No, he's not afraid of the plishtim. He's afraid of the archers. You could ask on a Barbanel, if Shaul is terrified of being captured, why would the archers in particular be the ones that are so troublesome to him? So the Marikra explains, it means that he was wounded. They're shooting arrows at Shaul, and the arrows are beginning to find their mark. In fact, you have this exact word in this exact context used in the end of Melachim Aleph. When Achav, the another king who goes to battle, like Shaul, Achav is told by the Navi that he is going to die in battle. Unlike Shaul, Achav does not believe the Navi. He sort of does because he dresses as a common man. He doesn't dress as a king, but he still goes to battle thinking he's going to live. And in the pasuk, he gets wounded by he gets hit by a bow and arrow, and Achav tells the rider of his chariot, "Hafoch yarchav otzinim min ha-machane, take me out of the battlefield, ki hachalesi, I've been wounded by an arrow." So it makes a lot of sense that that's exactly what's happening to Shaul. He's already getting wounded by arrows, perhaps even maybe more mortally so. Then Shaul says to the Nosei Kelim, right here's the famous scene. Right, take out your sword and stab me. Even though the Navi has referred to the Plishtim again and again, Shaul, to the very last, has nothing but contempt for the Plishtim. He calls them these uncircumcised, the Arelim. Right, lest they capture me unless they make a mockery of me. And when you can't help but remember what happens to Shimshon, what the Plishtim did to Shimshon, when thinking of where Shaul is over here. Okay. But what's so interesting is what actually happens. And here we see a very, very sharp contrast, and it's one which demonstrates the fact that Shaul truly was a king in Bnei Yisrael. Because what happens? We'll read the pasuk and think about something else in Jewish history. The weapons bearer did not dare kill Shaul because he was awed, he was terrified. So Shaul takes the sword himself, and Shaul falls on his sword. The theme of falling comes up again and again in this parak. We had that happen a couple of parakim ago when Shaul, who we were originally introduced to as being taller than anybody else in Kal Yisrael, fell down, right? Melo koma so, the Navi said. He fell down his whole bodily length. So now Shaul is falling down. He's falling down on his own sword. But his weapons bearer, right, his assistant, did not dare to touch him even when he ordered him to. And now the pasuk says, he was so distraught by Shaul's death that his weapons bearer falls on his own sword and dies as well. There's no indication that the weapons bearer was in serious jeopardy from the Plishtim. Doesn't seem like he was wounded. And doesn't seem like he'd be a particularly exciting prisoner for them to capture. It's just the emotional distress at the sight of Shaul dying that the Nosei Kelim cannot handle. And here there is a very, very clear contrast to the last person who was a Jewish so-called king. And that is in the ninth chapter of Sefer Shoftim, where you have Avimelech, the son of Gideon, who kills all of his brothers and claims kingship. And he's fighting a battle at the end of the parak over there, and he approaches the tower to try to light the tower on fire where the people have taken refuge. And there, the Navi had told us, some woman threw a millstone onto Avimelech's head. This will actually be brought up again later on in Sefer Shmuel Beis. Everyone in Klai Yisrael remembers this. This becomes a famous moment, a particularly humiliating end for Avimelech. We'll see Yoav and David talk about this in a few prakim. It's like anybody who's in the army, this was a constant joke. Avimelech, who got killed by a woman in the battle. Tarits es gulgalaso, right? She cracks his skull. So what happens? So Avimelech, the fake king, the one who claimed to be a king, so he called his weapons bearer, and he says the exact same thing as Shaul. Vayomer lo, shlof charbacha mosaseni, right? So take out your sword and kill me. Pen yomru li isha hargasu, lest they say about me for all eternity that I was killed by a woman in battle, which is very embarrassing. And this time, this Nosek Elam has no problem listening. The career narrow vayamos, his lad takes up the sword, stabs Avimelech, that's the end of him, no problem. Everyone sees that Avimelech dies. Okay, they all go home. No more reason to fight the battle. That is what it looked like. That's what it looks like when a fake king dies. He asks his weapons bearer to kill him. Weapons bearer says, no problem. The people see he's dead in the battle. They say, okay, that's it. We can go home. Avimelech was never somebody who truly represented the nation. He was only in it for himself the whole time. Once he's gone, there is no reason for the army to fight. There is this total contrast with Shaul. Right? Shaul is the one who really, really is the first Melech. It's not going to be a lasting kingship. It's not a totally successful kingship. But this is a true Melech in Yisrael. He is the one who, when he tells his Nosei Kelim to kill him because he's not going to make it, Nosei Kelim does not dare to do so. And he's the one when the Nosei Kelim sees Shaul dead, he can't bear the sight, and rather than just, you know, casually go home or run away from the battle, he kills himself in the process. We can't miss the contrast over here. So we're seeing Shaul dying, right? The way Barbanella is reading it, we're seeing him, you know, first of all, I mean, Chazal already pointed out to us the immense courage and leadership it took to go to battle in the first place when he knew that he was going to die. Shmuel had told him what was going to happen, and he accepted it, right? In theory, Chazal pointed out, Shaul could have fled, didn't have to go back, but he accepted the din. He goes back anyway. He fights bravely. According to Barbanel, he's fighting even as the men behind him are retreating. He's fighting until he is severely wounded. And it's finally at that point that he tells the Nosei Kelim to kill him. And when he does not dare do so, Shaul does instead. There are a couple of other points for us to think about over here. One, I'm just going to go a little bit out of order at what I put in source each, so sorry for skimming this for a second. But we see another instance here. We see Shaul's growth, because the first time we ever were introduced to Shaul, we also saw him with his assistant. And that was when they were on the lookout for the donkey. You know, the donkeys, right? Shaul's father's missing donkeys. But that time, Shaul was like led around by the nose by his na'ar. Remember, they looked around for the donkeys and Shaul said, okay, let's give up. Let's go home, because Shaul never finishes the job. He always gives up like right before he's going to finish. And it was the na'ar who said, no, we're right by Ramah. Let's go to Shmuel. He can help us. Shaul said, I don't have any money. I don't have anything to give him. The na'ar said, no problem. I have the money. Sounds like the na'ar is the one who's leading the show. He's the one with the ideas. He's the one with the initiative. He's the one with the solutions. He's the one who's actually got the money on the trip. It's like kind of amazing that Shaul does not have a wallet on him. He needs the na'ar for even that. We now come to the end of Shaul's life. And on the one hand, previously we saw so many contrasts with that visit to Shaul, to Shmuel, which led to such greatness. But we see the leader that Shaul has become. He's gone from somebody who's being led around by the nose by his na'ar to one who, when he tells the na'ar to kill him, the na'ar doesn't dare do so. And the na'ar is yare ma'od. Right? Shaul has truly transformed into a leader. We see the greatness and the majesty of him. The tragedy of Shaul is that the majesty is exposed most dramatically at the moment when it's too late. Right? It's like welcome to Shaul. I think there also are memories here, and this can help us understand something else that Chazal did. We can't help but think of the first battle of the Plishtim. I mean, the Navi already did that for us, because it stressed that the Plishtim camped at the same place they camped before. But the idea of Shaul falling, right, that you pull Shaul, we can't help but think of the last battle that Bnei Yisrael fought against the Plishtim where they lost, which also led to the fall and the death of the leader Bnei Yisrael had at the time. Right? And that was Eli. That was Eli, the Kohen Gadol, who falls off the back of his chair and dies. Been told about the defeat from the Plishtim. So Eli and Shaul, who really have so much in common, right? People who, leaders who mean well, leaders who absolutely mean well, but we saw consistently coming up short. We saw the two of them really have the same core Achilles heel. There's the major contrast between Chana on the one hand and Eli on the other, the major contrast between David and Yehonasan on the one hand and Shaul on the other, was that you had leaders here who never could truly understand Yiras Shamayim, and could never truly understand the idea that ultimately it's the Ritzon HaBore, which is what matters. It is the will. Hello, it is the will of the of the human leader, which is secondary. And of course, Chazal, and we talked about this a long time ago, but Chazal emphasized, and there are all sorts of reasons for them doing this, that who was the person who came to Eli? Who is the Ish mi Binyamin, the powerful man from Binyamin who came to Eli to break the news about the defeat against the Plishtim? So Chazal said Rashi flagged. Rashi thought it was Pshat. Was that it was Shaul. Everything is now coming full circle. You had young Shaul coming to Eli, right, the decrepit old leader breaking the news of the defeat. And that, Parak, was the moment that we had on the one hand the fall of Binyamin. Right? We remember then in Parak Dalid where Eli's daughter-in-law is having a child and she dies in childbirth and she calls her son Ikavod, and you can't help but think of the story of Rachel and Ben Oni and Binyamin, right? All the dark side of Shevet Binyamin, that the depressing piece of history was brought up in that parak. On the other hand, you had the Ishmi Binyamin, right, which was Shaul, who was going to be the rising power of Binyamin back in Parak Dalid. Now everything is coming full circle. So it's all complex. We're appreciating Shaul's majesty. We're also remembering that he's ultimately come up short. And ultimately, as a leader, he's going to stand more with Eli, somebody who, you know, there's a lot of good, but also a lot that was unfortunate, rather than with David and with Shmuel. Okay. So now, just to close out the parak, let me one more major bright point as we come to the end, because I mean it's really terrible. I mean, the pasuk says Vayama Shaul Shloshes Banav Nosei Kelav Gam Kol Anashav Vayama Hu Yachdav. So they all die together. Now Barbanel, even in that gruesome pasuk, Barbanel notices a nugget of optimism. Barbanel says Halach Shaul Beis Olamo Milavet Miluvet Im Banav VaAnashav Kasher Hayat Imano Itam. Right, that Shaul's sons and Shaul's main leaders, so they're with him in death as they were in life, right? This image of them accompanying him to the Olam HaEmes, which we're going to come back to. Right? So Barbanel is finding the little piece of light in this extremely dark pasuk. And in pasuk Zion, things get even darker. Vayiru anshei Yisrael asher be'ever ha'imek, asher be'ever ha'yardin, ki nasu anshei Yisrael v'chli mesu. So that whole valley, right, of Emek Yisrael, so they see that the Jews are fleeing. So all that beautiful land in the valley, that very fertile land, the cities that were there, which probably were only settled by Bnei Yisrael during the rule of Shaul. There's no way that the Bnei Yisrael had control over that territory before the time of Shaul. Shaul conquers that land. Now Bnei Yisrael are giving it up. They are running out of the valley. So they go to strip the dead, take their armor, take their weapons. It's a very lucrative process. So they find Shaul and his sons. What do they do? Right. So they take the armor, and then they took the bodies. They take the body and they hang it up on the wall of Beit Shan. Beit Shan, I'm just going to go back to the map for a second, show where it is. Beit Shan would be around over here. Okay, so it seems like it's a Canaanite city, also in the valley to the east of where the battle was. Right over here. Now notice, right across the Jordan River is the Jewish city of Yavesh Gilad. Right across the river, and that's going to be very important in one second. So that's where they hang up Shaul and his sons, in direct controversy to what the Torah says to us that we're supposed to do, right? We understand the value of Tzelem Elokim. We understand that it's a total disgrace to hang people up overnight. Torah says explicitly, you know, even if somebody violates the most heinous aveira, you can't do that. Lo salin nivla sawala itzki kavorsik reno yomahu is the pasuk where it's a mitzvah for burial. You know, even somebody who committed a violent avodah zara, even somebody who curses Hashem is going to be buried immediately. Right? It's a tumah to the land to leave the dead bodies out in public. But okay, the Plishtim had a totally different attitude, you know, than we did on so many levels. There's a reason why Shaul refers to them so derisively as the Arelim. Now, Abarbanel, we should just note this before finishing the parak, Abarbanel takes a step back at the end of the parak. This is a good place to cover it. And he says, it's time for us to take stock of why Shaul is being punished the way that he is. And Abarbanel says, Tzadikata Hashem Yashar Meshvatach. Says that the Mida Keneged Mida punishment for Shaul is extremely clear. Says here we're going back to the sin of the killing of Noav Ir HaKohanim. When Shaul killed the Avo Subanim, right? He killed Achimelech, the father of the Kohanim Gadol, the father of the Kohanim. He kills Achimelech's whole family. He kills all the next generation of the Kohanim. He says, Vayamish Bat Elokishim, Esu V'chol Banav Bidei Adam. So it was totally Mida Keneged Mida that Shaul dies along with his three other sons. It's very important to remember that even though Shaul was told he was going to lose the monarchy because of his sin in failing to wipe out Amalek, there were many different ways that that could have happened. One way that Shaul could have lost the monarchy was David could have married Michal, and David would have been the son-in-law, and David could have just taken over the dynasty. That's exactly what Yehonasan's plan was. It could have been a peaceful transfer of power. But Shaul spent parak after parak fighting against that. And now, says the Abarbanel, the tragic end that Shaul's family is going to come to is all going back to that avera of the destruction of Noav Ir HaKohanim. Shaul is killed. Shaul's sons are killed. Right? He sees them killed. You know, we're going to go ahead in Shmuel Beis. There's going to be unbelievable violence. More of Shaul's descendants are going to be killed in Shmuel Beis, right? All he says, it's all Mida Keneged Mida for that, right? He says, you know, there's the punishment of losing the monarchy, but now there's the way in which the monarchy is lost, which is going back to that Avera. Now, even as it's the original Avera of Shaul, which leads to this moment, so the end of the parak is going to be the fruits of one of the great accomplishments that Shaul had, right? So it's the fruits of his sin, which lead to him and his sons being killed, but it is the fruits of one of the great things he did, which is going to lead to what's going to come up next. And that is what happens here at the end of the parable. So Shaul and his sons are hanging up on the wall of the Canaanite city of Beit Shan. So they heard what happened. The people of Yavesh Galad, they get up and they, in an act of immense courage, they travel throughout the whole night. Remember, all Bnei Yisrael are running away from this valley. The people from Yavesh Galad, they cross the Jordan River. They go back into enemy territory. They sneak in the middle of the night. They steal, right? They grab the body of Shaul, the bodies of his children, off of the walls. They bring them back to Yavesh Galad. And then they do three things. The first one is kind of surprising. By Yisrafu Osam Sham. So it's a little bit strange. Why are they burning the bodies of Shaul and his sons? I thought we don't really do that. So we'll see. And then Then they bury the bones. Why do they only bury the bones? Why do they burn? Why not just bury the bodies? By Atsumish Shivasimim, they fast for 7 days. what exactly is the significance of the fast for 7 days? So it's a very, very confusing ending of the parak. The Radak basically explains everything. Radak says, why did they bury the bodies first? He says the bodies were left exposed by the Plishtim. We do not know how long that happened, right? We know that at some point the men of Yavesh Gilad hear the news. We don't know how long it took for them to get that news. Then they go the whole night and they grab Shaul's body, they bring it back. But Shaul's body, his son's bodies have been exposed for several days. Radak explains his preferred explanation, and Barbanel goes with this as well, is that they thought it was total bizayon. You had the decomposing bodies of Shaul and his sons. They thought what was the most proper and dignified way to bury the son, to bury the bodies, was first to burn away the flesh, right? Yitachim l'feresh ki basar safu shahala rima, they got all the worms, to the kavram imatolaim. They thought it was a disgrace to bury the decomposing flesh. Kavod. They want to do this in the most bekavitic way possible. The sarfu basar, and then the kavru atzamos. Then they bury the bones. Why do they fast for 7 days? So now the Radak says, once again, the Navi is bringing us back to an episode earlier in Sefer Shmuel. The first major accomplishment that Shaul had was not fighting against the Plishtim, if you recall. It was fighting against Nachash, the king of Ammon, who targeted the men of Yavesh Gilad. At the time, we suggested, it seemed pretty reasonable, that the men of Yavesh Gilad are actually descendants of Shevet Binyamin, because after the civil war of Sefer Shoftim, which left Bnei Yisrael totally disunited and destroyed, and so much of Shaul's job is to put back the pieces together from that civil war, but the men of Binyamin had nobody that they could marry because the other Jews had made a vow that you're not going to marry any of our daughters. So right, they ended up marrying the women from Yavesh Galad because the men of Yavesh Galad did not participate in the civil war. And it seemed like the men of Binyamin then settled in Yavesh Galad. So you have people from Shevet Binyamin there. Shaul united the nation in saving them from Nachash HaAmoni, gathered all the people together, and there were many, many references to that original Pilegesh Begiva civil war with this one. But Shaul united the people, saved the men of Yavesh Gilad. And what had happened there? So Radak says, this is a remember of 7 days. What were the 7 days of Yavesh Gilad? Well, the Navi told us way back in Parakid Aleph, Nachash HaAmoni came, he camped, he attacked Yavesh Gilad. They said, we'll serve you. And what did Nachash tell them? You have to mutilate yourselves. Right? Take out your right eye. And then the men of Yavesh Gilad had said, give us 7 days to see if anybody will save us. So Radak says that it was the 7 days right, that they waited for salvation from Bnei Yisrael, and Shaul came through. So that is why the men of Yavesh Gilad are so loyal to Shaul. And that is why they mourn specifically for 7 days as a recall of these 7 days. He didn't have to say that. He could have said it was 7 days of Sheva. I mean, you already have 7 days of mourning in Sefer Bereishis. But that's how the Radak understands. Another example, right? So it's a call, another callback to Shaul's past. So we have so much which is dark and so much which is depressing, right? But at the same time, Shaul is showing what it means to be a true king of Israel, going to battle, fighting the battle until he's wounded and can't fight anymore. The overwhelming awe which his Nosei Kalim feels for him, and the loyalty that the men of Yavesh Gilad feel as they remember what Shaul did for them and they respond in kind. And the last thing to notice, right, number one, we should notice what the very next pasuk is going to be. So the switching back and forth is going to continue. We can't think of Shaul's fall without thinking of David's rise. Shaul is dying, and David is coming right back from fighting, right from killing Amalek, which is exactly what Shaul was supposed to do. On the one hand, Shaul is so defined as being somebody who did not live up to the legacy which David is going to achieve. At the same time, there is no question of Shaul's greatness in his own right, And we should probably just close by remembering the line from the Medrash, which is repeated here in the Gemara and Brachos. Vayomer Shmuel al Shaul, machar ata ubanacha imi, right? You and your sons will be with me. Amar Yochanan, imi b'mechitzasi. You'll be with me in my realm, ultimately coming back to Olam Haba, right? So with all of the complexity of Shaul, all the disappointments, all of the things which are so unfortunate and frustrating, at the end of the day, the parak really drives home for us, this was a true melech of Yisrael, one who is surely appreciated in the Olam Haba. So, everyone, and looking forward next week to